let's get started. Obviously, the big story of the week was the Derek Chauvin case. The former Minneapolis police officer was found guilty on all counts very quickly, really, just about 10 hours of deliberation. Now, the case moved to the sentencing process, and I think that the sentencing is going to be interesting, maybe a little bit more interesting even than the outcome of the trial, which I think we all sort of predicted that it was going to go this way. But what are we going to do? We're going to talk to a judge who's a former judge. We hardly ever get to go into a judge's head to figure out what is he thinking about, what is she thinking about in terms of how do you sentence someone? How do you punish somebody? How do you what concerns do you have? And what message are we going to send here? And with us is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. He has spent 27 years as a judge here in Chicago, partly in state, partly as a federal judge, regular on the show. And he's now at JAMS, which is the largest provider of mediation arbitration services worldwide, where he's settling cases rather than litigating them. Judge Anderson, how are you?
Great. You're only saying that good stuff because I wear my Conte Law mask.
Well, you just texted me with a picture of you wearing it, and I'm telling you, it is safe yet fashionable, and you wear it well, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about just the logistics of what happened. We had three counts, and I get the question all the time. Why were there three different counts when we were talking about just one set of actions?
Well, the prosecutor thought that depending upon the level of intention of the defendant, that the jury could reasonably find him guilty of three different offenses. And so, in fact, they found that he was guilty of all three offenses. Generally speaking, under Minnesota law, that means he'll get sentenced for the most severe one, in this case, second-degree murder, rather than the others.
Okay, so it's not like he's going to... Oh, sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, if for some reason the jury didn't think it was second-degree murder or there were a technical defect, then he could be sentenced for third-degree or the manslaughter charge that they found him guilty of.
Got it. So, and I think even some media outlets were reporting that he could be sentenced on all three of them, but that's just not the way it works. It's going to be on the most severe one. Okay, and then the judge in reading the verdict of the jury said two things that were not explained, and I want to explain them. The judge ordered Blakely briefs and a PSI, and it's I don't think that's a prostate
right.
exam, but let's talk
PSA.
PSA it might turn into one. Let's talk about Blakely briefs briefly. What is a Blakely brief?
So under Minnesota law as well as under federal law, there's what are called sentencing guidelines. And the law, then, these guidelines set a presumptive range within which a defendant should be sentenced if he's convicted of a certain crime. In this case, the presumptive range for second-degree murder in Minnesota is approximately between 20 and 30 years in prison. And in a Blakely brief, the prosecutor and the defense attorney could both say to the court why they did not think that presumptive range was correct. Are there reasons to go above that range, or are there reasons to go below that range? And so the judge, under Minnesota law, if he wants to go outside that 20 to 30 year range, has to explicitly explain that on the record and report to a central agency in Minnesota as to why he departed from that range.
Okay, and then let's just mention this briefly, and we're going to have to take a break in about 30 seconds, but what is a PSI?
A PSI is a pre-sentence investigation. It's a report prepared by the probation department giving basically the life history and background, usually of just the defendant, sometimes the victim as well, and the criminal history of anybody involved.
And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the factors that you as a judge, I mean, you've sentenced people for years. Federal courts hear very serious cases, federal violations of federal law, and you have sat in those cases and you've decided them, or you've had juries in your courtroom and you've made the decisions, the really tough decisions on how to sentence somebody and how to punish them. And I want to get in your head a little bit about how this judge might be thinking about the Derek Chauvin case. You're listening to Karen Conti's show. I'm here with Judge Wayne Anderson on WGN. Welcome back on this April afternoon. We're talking about sentencing criminal defendants in light of the Derek Chauvin conviction this week. And we're here with Judge Wayne Anderson, who's a retired judge. He spent 27 years on the bench. And let's talk a little bit about what the factors are and the general mind frame that you had as a judge when you sentenced a criminal defendant.
Well, when I had discretion, such as the judge in this case does, the guidelines are 20 to 30 years, but he can go up to 40 years under the statute in Minnesota. I realize when you're in that position that there isn't necessarily a, quote, right sentence. So the judge is going to have to look into his mind as well as his heart, because there isn't necessarily a right answer. In almost all cases, you need to take a look at the severity of the offense. What was the impact on the victim? In this case, it was as bad as it possibly could be. What was its impact on society? Another really aggravating circumstance. One also looks at the offender, a person who, what does his background show? In this case, a police officer. Undoubtedly, his lawyers will be saying he's protected the public for many years, and this isn't the entire man we saw that day. And oftentimes that's true. Rarely do you see the entire human being during the course of that offense. So one tries to balance out the factors of what it's like for the victim and his family and larger society, and who the defendant really is. Difficult things to do. And then, of course, one's concerned with deterrence. Is this going to affect the behavior of others in the future? And is this person a danger to the community, the particular defendant? All those things swirl through your mind when you're trying to sentence someone. I think very importantly also is how the defendant feels about it. Is he going to actually say and believe, express true sorrow for this, or is he going to be defiant? And I think that affects what a judge does as well.
I'm going to talk a little bit about that because he will be almost certainly be given the opportunity to say something to the judge, the court, and to the public, maybe the family of George Floyd. And I want to talk about how much weight that's given. But let's talk a little bit about some of these factors that you discussed, which are all, you know, very important. And, you know, I've been talking about this case, and a lot of people say, well, he should get the max. But he's a guy who really hasn't had a prior conviction, right? And like you said, he's protected the public arguably for 18 years. I believe he had some military experience. He's probably done some very good things in his career. Maybe he's been guilty of some bad things, but nothing that's landed him in jail. And certainly he's been punished quite a bit. He's lost everything. He's a household word. And on the other hand, you have to, like you said, you have to look at the severity of not only what happened to George Floyd, but how this has impacted everybody. How much, as a judge, how much pressure is there when the whole world is looking and you're worried that your sentence could possibly result in riots and protests and looting and all kinds of crazy stuff? How much does that impact what you do in this particular case?
It's interesting. I think at the outset, it's bound to have an impact. And so you're very careful. I thought the way this judge handled himself was extremely carefully and deliberately. But when you get back in to decide the sentence and you try to factor all that into the equation, I think what most judges come down to, what I would come down to, is what you believe is right in the situation without worrying about what the world is going to think about it. If you worry about what the world's going to think about it, then the chances of getting, quote, the right sentence are practically zero. So most judges have very secure positions. They've done this before. They know they don't have a magically right answer. So they look into their mind and their heart, and they do what they think is right, regardless of those outside pressures.
And I have a feeling, just having watched this judge, that he is one of those people, that he's not going to succumb to, you know, I'm guessing, but he, just his actions and his words seem to me to be consistent with what you're saying. You talked a little bit about deterrence, and that's one of the factors that a judge can consider in figuring out what the sentence is going to be. And, you know, I think about it kind of both ways, because obviously you want to deter police officers from killing people unnecessarily, of course, that goes without saying.
Right.
But you also, is there also also a thought that if you give him 40 years in prison, that other police officers might quit their jobs, people might not go into the profession. Is that something that you can consider? Is that something that is on the table there in for your consideration?
Well, that debate, which is now broken out into the public, of course, is bound to be, to some extent, on the mind of the sentencing judge and perhaps on the minds of colleagues that he might consult. However, when you think about that extensively, you realize you can't let that overly influence you. In this particular case, my guess is that justice will be upgraded through this particular sentence, and I think it has been through this prosecution. But nobody really knows the impact on society. And one obviously hopes, as a judge, that the police officers that come before you who are sworn to tell the truth do that. And nothing reaffirms, perhaps, the significance of that more than punishing an officer who deliberately violates his oath of office. So that judge may be thinking, this prosecution, this sentence, should actually assist good police officers in doing their job because they know the system isn't going to cover up and minimize the problems with bad police officers. But nobody knows.
Right, right. Yeah, and in this case, it was an unusual one in that you don't hear a lot of police officers, at least my friends who are police officers, saying, yeah, he did what he was supposed to do. And certainly the police department turned on him and testified against him. And you never see that kind of, your own police department is testifying
right
against you, including the chief. That's kind of unprecedented.
Right.
We touched on this before, and I've heard this a lot from people on the street saying, you know, I watched Chauvin and he was so unemotional and he was so arrogant and he was just sitting there and he showed no feelings at all and he should do a lot of time because of that. What do you make of that type of argument? Is that a fair criticism?
Well, that remains to be seen. We all saw snippets of, if not that entire 9-minute tape, and we saw him sitting in the courtroom seemingly impassively. Logic says that certainly while he was in the courtroom, his insides were churning, even if his face wasn't. So we don't know this man yet. We know that probably we didn't see the complete man during the commission of that offense. So one of the things the judge will want to do is find out what kind of a human being he is. It could be he's worse than that impassive thing, or it could be that there's some secret kindness that wasn't shown. That's one of the reasons he'll get a chance to testify in court, and they'll be able to call witnesses who've known him for a long time to testify about him. Similarly, of course, the victims will get to do the same thing. And so when you're a judge sitting there, you're trying to explore the character of the defendant and determining whether or not they deserve this sentence, maybe more, maybe less, based on the offense, but also based on who they are. And in Derek Chauvin's case, we don't really know much about him yet. That pre-sentence investigation and the testimony and perhaps the statements he makes to the court will reaffirm this cold impression we have of him, or give us a different facet. We'll see.
And, you know, I assume that you understand, you know, you are a practicing lawyer and you've had a long history of trying cases and watching criminal defendants. And I always tell my client to just don't show any emotion because a jury could take it one way or the other. If he's emotional, it's like, oh, he admits what he did was wrong. If he's cold, then he's arrogant. So you don't really win any which way when the jury's watching you. But you're right. So let's talk about him addressing the court. I think that might be one of the most dramatic moments in this whole piece, because you're right, we haven't heard from him. What is it, as a judge, you want him to say? What is it that you want to hear from him to mitigate, perhaps, what might be a very long sentence?
Well, if I wanted him to mitigate it, I'd want him to face the victim's family, and frankly, in this case, the world as a whole, and apologize in a meaningful way. Is he truthful when he does that or not? Who knows? But at the very least, that's what I'd like him to do. And I'd like him to feel free to show who he really is. keeping that in mind, imagine, one can't imagine a situation more difficult than standing before a judge while awaiting a range of heavy sentences. Is that the real person? Would any of us be able to display our real self under those circumstances? It's really hard to say, and that's one of the subjective factors the judge takes into account. So I tried not to hold it against somebody if they didn't give a good speech, because I think it's an almost impossible situation. If they did make a good statement, I try to think through to whether or not, to what extent it was really genuine.
And you're right, because not everybody is good in court. Some people get nervous and they don't present well. And
yeah, and with good reason, right?
Right.
Your clients, when they come to their sentencing, this isn't a sunny day they're looking forward to, right?
Yeah, it's and perhaps that was one of the factors that went into him not testifying, although there were other factors that probably led to that decision. But it could be that he was just a terrible witness and wasn't going to speak well for himself. So very, very interesting. I have 10 seconds. Pretrial publicity. Do you think this was a case that could be overturned because of pretrial publicity?
No.
And why is that?
Unanimous jury. It's the unanimous jury, carefully picked. The evidence will be reviewed. There's really no dispute regarding any of this evidence. I think these judgments will be affirmed if it's appealed.
Judge Wayne Anderson, always a pleasure. You always give great insight, and you always explain everything so well. You take care, wear my Conti Law mask in good health, and join us again soon, will you?
Thanks, Karen. Have
All right.
a great day.
Okay, take
Bye.
Care.